Okay, guys, listen up. If you bet on sports now that it's legal here in the Philadelphia area, and since you're listening to this podcast, you obviously do. The man that can help you make money this football season is a guy I trust with the premium information, John Price of SportsInformationTraders.com. John Price knows the lines better than anyone in the country, and he specializes in line movement and value. So when you sign up with his company, you get the best lines and before the public does. And he can help you make up 5 times your investment in just 90 days. Go to SportsInformationTraders.com right now and learn why John Price is the only sports wagering analyst in a weekly feature in Forbes magazine. You want to win? Put this number on your phone, 866-441-2711. Again, 866-441-2711. Call and ask about the 90-day special. John Price is a proven winner and has been among the best for years with documented success in the Las Vegas Sports Contest. 866-441-2711. SportsInformationTraders.com. Again, 866-441-2711. SportsInformationTraders.com. Watch football, make money, it's that simple.
Welcome to the NBA panel with your host, John Weatherspoon, and co-host, Brian Eisen. The NBA panel covers the league to keep you up to date with NBA news, movements, and stats. Join us as we discuss the sport that we love, the NBA. Now, here's Brian Eisen and your host, John Weatherspoon.
Yes, welcome to episode 107 of the NBA panel. I'm your host, John Weatherspoon, with the panel members. We'll keep you updated with all things NBA. Today, we'll be joined by LA Clippers reporter, Jovan Buha. What's going on, Jovan?
I'm doing well, man. How are you doing?
Everything's good. Everything's good. So you've been having a busy week, haven't you?
Yeah. I've been all over the place, but finally back in LA for a few days, and heading out to Portland next week.
Yeah, you guys was in the oldest area of the day, Philadelphia. Y'all played the Sixers.
That was my first time in Philly. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this area is very good. It's very good. Over the week, last night we have the Golden State Warriors, and they picked up the 7th straight win, looking like they're getting together. That's a scary thought, also a scary sight. I mean, it's crazy. The team is put together to win now and possibly in the future. There's a couple situations about contracts coming up with Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant. But I think they can make it work. They can play with numbers, take less if maybe. I mean, Klay talking about not taking a pay cut, but we'll see how that works out. Because this team right now is built as a dynasty. And if you want to keep it together, they're going to definitely make it work. So, Jovan, let's get caught up on you. Tell us about your career.
Yeah, so I fell in, you know, like most people in this industry doing what we're doing, I fell in love with basketball as a little kid. Just kind of remember, being 8 years old and kind of discovering the game for the first time. And I just kind of became obsessed with it. And ever since then, it's been my dream and my passion to, first it was to make the NBA. I'm tall, but I figured that was not going to happen kind of once I got to high school. So after that, I played all through high school and still continue to play, just like rec ball to this day. But I actually discovered, like, even more so than playing, my passion was discussing the game and breaking it down. And, I still have my notebooks when I was younger of, doing my own version of power rankings and ranking players and, it didn't really dawn on me, but I was always into like that type of, breaking things down, analyzing things. So, I ended up being, a good writer in school. Didn't really enjoy writing, but if I wrote about stuff I liked, then I guess it kind of piqued my interest. And it kind of just made sense to me. So senior year of high school, took a, joined journalism, became a sports writer for our school paper. Then I ended up going to USC for print and digital journalism. And there is kind of where I got to spread my wings and start to learn about the industry and started to network. So freshman year didn't really do much, but heading into my sophomore year, I got a break and was brought on to write for Clipper Blog, which used to be ESPN used to have the True Hoop Network, which was kind of their version of almost like SB Nation or Fansided. So Clipper Blog was the Clippers blog for True Hoop. And from there, I got to start covering Clipper games, going to like the draft, and, different stuff, different press conferences and stuff. And that was pre Chris Paul. So
okay.
It was right before they got Chris Paul. So once they got Chris Paul, there was an extra need for Clippers content.
Right.
And the person who actually created Clipper Blog was Kevin Arnovitz of ESPN fame. So Kevin kind of, gave us all, I owe a lot to him because, he opened the door with Clipper Blog, and then he also opened the door with freelancing for ESPN LA. So ESPN LA, was looking for more Clippers content now because, already Blake Griffin was, kind of becoming a national star and people were interested in him, but then they added Chris Paul and, now all of a sudden it was Lob City. And I think people forget, the expectations for the Clippers are pretty high those first couple of years. Like people thought that they could maybe win a championship or at least
right.
the finals or something. So there's a lot of national interest. So that was a great opportunity for me. I began freelance writing for ESPN LA, covering Clipper games for them, eventually covering Laker games for them, and kind of worked my way to a point where I was the backup Lakers and Clippers writer. So if the beat writer couldn't go to practice, they would send me. If they couldn't go to a game, they would send me. If they just needed an extra article that week, they would ask me to write it. So that was a great experience, kind of like my sophomore, junior, senior year of college. At the time, also, I interned at Grantland. The first year, Grantland was there. And that was also a good experience. Bill Simmons was really a big influence on me early in my career, still to this day, but especially early on getting into just writing and thinking about the game and he just the type of ways he would think about things or break things down. It was similar to me, I felt at the time. And that was also the same office building, Grantland was with ESPN. So that was the same office building actually as the ESPN LA people. So it kind of strengthened my relationship with them. So,
okay.
Long story short, graduated, got hired by Fox Sports, was a writer and editor there for a couple years. Then that, I could kind of see the writing on the wall. That was like right before they pivoted to video.
Right.
And a friend had told me that ESPN was looking for an editor position for this group that used to be called the Live Group, where basically it was doing like sort of like mobile journalism. ESPN has this internal platform where you can, it's almost like Twitter, but you can upload photos, videos, and short text. And it goes, you've probably seen it on the site before. It's called Shortstop. But it's just easy when you're at, you're at a game, you're at a practice, you're at an event, easy to upload content directly to the site. And that can be used, on everything. It goes right to the server. So there's been times I've been at stuff, I'll, record a video, and 30 minutes later, it's on SportsCenter. And that's a really cool technology platform that they have. So I was a part of that group for a bit, then got switched to the NBA team, which is where I really wanted to be and was an editor there. And then at some point, though, I kind of realized, for as happy as I was working at ESPN, as happy as I was being an editor and doing what I was doing, for me, my passion has always been writing, covering games, being able to express my opinion, just kind of being in the mix myself. And, the athletic opportunity presented itself. At first, I thought that might be in a different city. And, I was definitely open to that, but I wasn't 100% sure if I wanted to move. Once they offered me the Clippers position, it was a no-brainer for me. So I've been at the Athletic for 4 months, and I've been loving it. Been getting to travel, got to go to Hawaii for training camp, Las Vegas for summer league and Team USA camp. Now I just went on the Clippers, first couple road trips.
Right,
it's been great, and now I'm here talking to you.
That's what's up, man. You had a good career so far. Congratulations on everything. Can you give us your take on the Lob City years? Because a couple of those years, a lot of us thought that the Clippers were going to make it happen, and then once again, injuries came up, particularly to Chris Paul. There was a couple of years he got hurt that like stunted everyone's growth.
Yeah, I think that the Lob City era, to me, it's unfortunate that it's probably going to be a blimp in NBA history, and you know, like, people are not going to remember it, and you know, maybe, I mean, Chris Paul is going to be a Hall of Famer, so maybe, you know, people will kind of remember it just because of that. And, you know, Blake Griffin for a time was a really popular star, and you know, the dunking on everybody and media commercials and all that stuff. So I think maybe people will remember it 15, 20, 30. I don't know. But the thing for me that was frustrating was from seeing them every game and, you know, being at every home game and stuff, like, I saw the potential. I saw this team. I mean, they beat, like, they were really the last team to beat the Warriors before, you know, the Cavs beat them in 2016, which I think most people would say was kind of fluky with the suspension and the different stuff that kind of happened at the end of that series. So really, like, the last team to flat out beat the Warriors in a playoff series was the Clippers. And a lot of people forget that. And they beat them in seven games. And that was kind of the first time you started to see, like, I left that series thinking, damn, this Warriors team is going to be so good. Did I think they're going to be this good? Eventually I can grant no.
Right.
But, like, from watching that series, I was like, what? Like, can't guard Stephen Curry. Like, he's so good. But going back to the Clippers, like, that team, I saw that team, I saw that team beat the Warriors. I saw that team beat the Spurs in the playoffs. I saw that team, you know, blow a Thunder series and a Rocket series that they should have won both series. Like, you just saw that potential there, and you saw them, not only beat some of these teams, but blow them out at home and stuff. And it was just like, this team, when they were on, they were so good on both ends, you know, more so on the offensive end. But, Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan pick and roll was basically unstoppable. Blake Griffin, before kind of started, the injury started to take its toll on him physically, like, he was a beast in the post, beast in the pick and roll, started to expand his range. Now he's shooting threes, but, you know, that was kind of before he left the Clippers. So, to me, what was, you know, kind of just frustrating, not even as, like, you know, someone rooting for them, because, you know, I try to be objective,
right?
But just as someone who could, you know, because I have a lot of fans, a lot of friends that are Laker fans, and, you know, they would always talk trash about the Clippers and Lob City and everything. And it was just like, from someone that watched them so closely and kind of knew how good that team could be, it was just kind of a frustrating that every postseason it was something else. Like, if you go back and look, the only exception kind of was they blew the Thunder series and the Rocket series. But every other postseason, someone was injured. Blake was injured. Chris was injured. Two of them, they were both injured. It's just like, they were snake bitten. They had really bad luck. And, unfortunately, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter why you lose. You know, like, the two ones to me that really stood out was, like, they lost to Portland, which, they're a much better team than that Portland team. And then they lost to Utah, and they lost to Utah because Blake got injured in game three. So it was just, those are like the last two series they played together. And, it was a very frustrating overall experience, but when that team was on, I think they were as good as anybody during that stretch. They just weren't able to turn it on, for long enough periods of time.
Doc Rivers took over the team in 2013. Have you seen an approach to his coaching style since Lob City essentially ended, since those three major players left, Griffin, CP3
and DJ. I mean, Doc's changed his style a lot, obviously with Chris there, and with Blake there. They had to play a certain, you know, Chris, and that's why it's been so fascinating to see how he's played Houston, because Chris has always been a ball dominant, point guard. with that said, he may be, you know, the best ball dominant point guard of all time. Like, just looking at his assist to turnover ratio, his efficiency, like, Chris Paul is an amazing all time decision maker. So having him run your offense, like, and the Clippers are basically top five, if not top three, I think, every year in offensive efficiency that Chris Paul was on the team. So having Chris Paul run your offense is a pretty good idea. Then they also had to find ways to get Blake, sometimes with the second unit, also had Jamal Crawford and stuff. So they kind of ran, you know, they ran almost all of their offense exclusively through like two or three guys. Now the Clippers don't have that guy. At times, you know, last season was a really weird season because half of their rotation was injured and they had to rely on, you know, G League guys and
right.
second round pick rookies and stuff. It was a really weird year. So they ended up relying a lot on Lou Williams, who obviously had a career year, you know, second Sixth Man of the Year award. So I would say last season, you started to see kind of that the approach that Doc was developing offensively, which is just kind of, you know, running things for everybody. I think now you kind of see that way more where, you know, I think Tobias Harris and Neil Gallinari are the two best players and kind of the more the go-to guys offensively right now.
Right.
But this Clippers team, everybody eats. You know, they run actions for everybody, whether it's, you know, backdoor cuts, people curling off screens, people flaring out, spotting up, whatever. You know, there aren't a lot of ISOs. It's a lot of pick and rolls, you know, a lot of off-ball screening, a lot of slipping screens. This team is really good at slipping screens, cutting, like kind of getting behind defenses. But, you know, every now and then they'll run out an isolation for Gallo or an isolation for Tobias. And then second unit, you know, Lou Williams can sometimes run the show. But for the most part, like, Doc is really engineered a system now where, you know, they want everyone to be able to attack. They don't want you to kind of just focus on one person. And if you're going to focus on one person and, you know, you're going to put your stopper on Tobias, well, then they're going to attack you with Gallo.
Right.
Or Avery Bradley, who's now starting to shoot better and stuff. So, you know, I think this team ultimately has a ceiling on their potential just because they don't have that traditional star. I think Tobias Harris, people are sleeping on him. I think he's averaging like 22-9 right now. I don't expect that to go, you know, away. Like I think Tobias Harris is legit, but they do not have that you know, traditional star that probably an all-star that you can go to at the end of games or just will go drop 20 in a quarter. Like, they don't have that guy. So I think that ultimately limits how good they can be offensively and just how good they could be overall. But, you know, I think this Clippers offense is probably better than people think. And that started to show at the beginning of the season.
And you do have that anchor on defense, Patrick Beverley. He is a dog on defense.
Yeah.
Yeah. He definitely is. And I'm very familiar with Danilo Gallinari. He used to be on the Denver Nuggets, and he has a history of being injury prone. I think if he can stay healthy, he'll definitely help this Clippers squad in the future and fight for a playoff spot. I definitely see that happening.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I did a ranking before the season for The Athletic on – I ranked the Clippers 1 through 17, so the 15 guys on the roster and two-way guys. I ranked them 1 through 17 in terms of interest. And that to me was like, which players are the most interesting for me heading into the season for various reasons, just to see how they play or to see what their role is or to see how they develop. Or I put Gallo, you know, so Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was first because
right.
You know, everybody loves this rookie. I think he's going to be really good. I don't know if that means all-star. I don't know if that means star, but like at the very least, I think he's going to be an above average point guard, starting point guard in this league, which is a pretty good player. I put Tobias Harris second because he's in a contract year. He, you know, supposedly turned down that big contract extension that the Clippers offered him over the summer. And, you know, he's kind of betting on himself to have a big, you know, star type season, which so far so good. And third, I put Gallo because Gallo, you know, Gallo when healthy is like a top 50 player,
right?
You know, maybe even approaching that top 40. Like he's one of, you know, besides James Harden, he might be the second best player in the NBA at getting to the free throw line. Like, he draws fouls so well. You know, he's such a big body that, you know, it's kind of a matchup problem for most forwards, just because he's either too big for you or he could take you off the dribble. Gallo is really good. But just as you said, like, I think over the last 4 years, he's averaged almost like 20 missed games a season. So you kind of always have to pencil him in for missing a quarter of the season at least. And two of those seasons, I think he missed half the season or more. So I think with him, the big thing is the Clippers owe him $40 million over the next 2 years. And you know, so that's a lot of money for a guy who didn't play 20 games last year.
Right.
So if you're the Clippers, looking at kind of next summer when you're going to have two max slots, I think ideally if you're them, you might want to get off that Gallo contract. So if Gallo has a really good season, he's potentially movable as an expiring contract next summer to, you know, a team maybe trying to get, you know, a starting forward or just get better. And that would open up a lot of cap space for the Clippers, where they could, you know, maybe keep Tobias or add another guy. So I think just how Gallo plays this season is going to be really fascinating because, you know, at the worst, if he just lives up to his contract, that's a good thing. And that, you know, then that was money well spent. And you got your investment. In the worst case, he gets injured this season, misses half the year again. And now you're just looking at it like, this is dead money. No one's going to take on this contract. He has not lived up to this contract. He might not even play 100 games as a Clipper during this contract. Like, that is a failure of a signing. And I think, to me, like, if you look at what the Clippers pretty much revamped their front office last summer. If you look at every move they've made since then, I think every move has been a single, at least. Like, they've had some singles, some doubles, but the Blake Griffin trade was a big win for them. But the Gallo contract is the one signing where you can point to and say, that didn't make sense. That didn't make sense at the time, but it especially didn't make sense after they traded Blake and we're trying to go into this, like, we're getting younger, more flexible,
right,
whatever. So that's the one contract I look at. I'm like, that does, you know, it didn't make sense back then. It still doesn't make sense now. So Gallo, to me, is the most, you know, one of the most fascinating guys on the team, just because he can raise the ceiling to, you know, if they are going to make the playoffs, like, Gallo has to be healthy and playing really well. Right now it's looking like that's a possibility, but there's still, you know, 70 games left.
Yeah.
We'll see if he can withstand that.
Yeah. Right now the Clippers are, I believe, seventh in the West right now. And the West is going to be tight between, I'll say, 3 to 9 is going to be a fight, a dog fight, because a couple of teams got off to a slow start. The Thunder, I believe they started at 1-3. Now they went out to 4. They're 4-4. Utah Jazz are 4-4. So that bottom half of the Western Conference is going to be a battle. We all know last year one team missed the playoffs by one game, came out of one game for the last playoff spot last year. So where do you see the Clippers fitting in for the last playoff spot? Do you see them between 5 and 8?
This is the loaded question for me. I think if they're healthy, and by healthy, I just mean reasonable health, you know, like as most teams, you know, just kind of average health. I think their ceiling is probably a 7 seed. I would be, you know, it'd be tough for me to see them being better than that, just because, you know, I think the bigger concern for them, besides their, like, offensively, for as much, you know, I think they had the most starting lineups last year, and they had the most games lost to injury last year. They might have been like top 2 or 3 in that. They still had the 8th best offense last year. And, you know, props to Doc Rivers, props to Lou Williams. So I think this year they're still going to probably have a top 14, top 12 at least offense, which is, you know, pretty solid. Defensively is where the concern is for me, because I'm sure you've heard the Clamp City kind of nickname that Patrick Beverley came up over the summer, and that's great. Like, they have Patrick Beverley, Avery Bradley, Luke Mbamute. Those are three of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, and together they form, you know, a really, really good perimeter trio. The problem is, their interior defense is not good. And, you know, I just kind of wrote about it yesterday, but looking at the numbers, they're bottom 10 in basically anything that has to do with perimeter, you know, interior defense. So, you know, basically, you know, points in the paint, second chance points, you know, how many shots people are getting at the rim, how many makes people are making at the rim. Like, they're in that bottom 10, if not bottom 5. So I think the bigger concern, and you saw it last night, where Boban Marjanovic replaced Marcin Gortat in the starting lineup.
Right.
You know, Gortat is, you know, to be quite frank, is washed at this point. He's been the Clippers' worst rotation player this season. He didn't even play last night. And I think that's honestly how it should be moving forward. Like, he has not looked like an NBA rotation player. People kind of didn't realize last season he fell off a lot with Washington, had, you know, pretty much his worst season since he was a rookie, and he's having an even worse season now. So I think he should be out of the rotation. And you know, Montrezl Harrell can get a block or two here or there, but he's very foul prone. He loves to you know, bite at pump fakes, jump for blocks, you know, can be a little wild on the defensive end and not disciplined. And that can give up a lot of offensive rebounds or backdoor cuts and stuff. And then Boban, you know, the biggest guy in the NBA, and, you know, basically can touch the rim standing, you know,
yeah,
lifting his arm up. but he's just so slow that, you know, if you get him moving at all,
yeah,
he has to recover or rotate, he can't do it in time. So my thing with them is just, I have, you know, we've already seen it. Like, they started off, I think, as the third best defense. I think now they're already to like 10 or 11. Like, their defense has been slipping consistently through the, you know, through these first 9 games. So to me, I have concerns of what their defense is going to look like, you know, game 40, game 60. And if they can't be a top, you know, 15 defense, then it's going to be hard for them to make the playoffs. I think they can be top 15, but where they kind of fall in there, I feel like it's probably closer to that middle of the pack. So for them, I see them as a 7 or 8 seed if healthy. If Tobias or Gallo or Lou goes down, you know, those are the 3 best players. I think this team definitely falls out of the playoff mix. But it wouldn't surprise me too if everyone's healthy and they're still a 9 or 10 seed, because the West is so deep. Like, you know, you said 9 deep. I think you could maybe even go 11 deep, or like the Grizzlies look like they might be in the mix now. You obviously have the Lakers and Nuggets trying to get into the mix.
Yeah.
Really, the only team from last year that I think won't make it, in my opinion, for sure, is the Spurs. You know, I'm kind of down on the Spurs this season. But besides that, like, I think you have all 7 teams from last postseason should think they're going to make it. And now you're adding the Nuggets, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Grizzlies potentially. Like, yeah, I just think that the West is so deep, and you know, we could really see, like, you know, 11 teams potentially with like 45 plus wins, which I don't know if that's ever happened before. So the West this year is going to be amazing.
Yeah, you have to add the Lakers because of LeBron. Any team with LeBron is automatic contender. The Lakers haven't made the playoffs the last 5 years, but this year might be that year. And like you said about the Boban, he's kind of slow, so they put him in a pick and roll. That could be a problem for the Clippers defense, definitely. But he's so aggressive on offense. It's crazy. Like you say, he don't have to jump to finish. He's grabbing rebounds with one hand. Like, we've seen, I don't know if you've seen it. We've seen it on TV. You see it in person. He just grabs a rebound, just pumps face with one hand and throws it down without even jumping. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, props to him, because I'm sure you remember guys like Sean Bradley and stuff like that. Like, those guys were not, you know, you can be big. And I actually think, you know, my secret theory is I think Boban's bigger than 7'3". Like, you look at, he looks at 7'3", but you look at him standing next to other 7-footers, look at him standing next to guys even like listed at 7'1". Like, he looks bigger than like 2 or 3 inches, you know, 2 or 3 inches bigger than some of those guys. So I think personally, he's probably closer to 7'4", maybe even 7'5". So a guy that size, you know, we've rarely seen guys that size be, you know, that coordinated and skilled. Like, the first guy that comes to mind is Yao Ming.
Yeah.
He's not Yao Ming, but really, you know, after that, it's, very short list of guys kind of in that size. You know, Porzingis, I guess, technically listed 7'3". There's guys like, you know, Arvydas Sabonis and you know, but now you're going way back. And I just think there's a long history of you know, guys like Sean Bradley and just kind of these more awkward, super tall guys. And Boban, I think to his credit, is really skilled offensively. You know, everyone looks at those dunks that go viral of him just not even jumping, but like people don't necessarily highlight the hook shots he makes or the way he'll pin someone to get open. And you know, he has a hook, you know, out to like 8-10 feet, and you know, he can hit mid-range shots. And then you know, defensively, like for as slow as he is, like he tries and can't really hold that against him. Like he's not a lazy defender. It's just when you're that size and you know, there's only so quick, you don't be so quick. So for him, I think, and he's been, you know, the thing with him, which, you know, going back to Gortat for a second, which I just saw this morning before we started recording this, was Clipper Darrell last night tweeted about Gortat coming off the bench and saying it was heartbreaking because Gortat had started the second most consecutive games in the NBA. I think it was like 172 before last night. And he was like, it's heartbreaking. You know, how could you bench a guy after 8 games? Like, da, da, da. And Gortat retweeted that. So to me, what that shows is Gortat is not happy about coming off the bench. And I think that was always going to be, you know, that was the thing that I wrote about going into the season, because I actually thought Montrezl Harrell had a good chance to be the starting center. I still think he is their best center option, but Doc really just prefers him coming off the bench. But, you know, Gortat is a proud player. He's outspoken in the media. You saw that in Washington with John Wall. He's not afraid to speak his mind. So I always thought that him being a super proud and outspoken player would not be cool with coming off the bench. And now you kind of see that where, you know, he's already retweeting stuff about him coming off the bench, being upset about it. Boban, you know, he's played in every game, but there's been games he's played 2 minutes, and he's never complained once. He's accepted his role, and I think he deserves to start now with the way he's been playing. So I think that's another thing with Boban where, you know, very few guys in the NBA are cool with not playing or playing 2 minutes a night. He's one of them, and I think that's what, you know, kind of just makes him special as a, you know, just as a person, because so few guys are like that in the league, and I think that's admirable.
Yeah, we all know the NBA is what have you done for me lately. And Marcin Gortat, you don't realize that, because if you're not producing, you're not going to be on the floor. Teams are trying to get wins immediately and not waiting. So what's your take on new owner Steve Ballmer? Every time I see him, he's so just glittery and just happy to be at all the games. What's your take on seeing him in person?
I mean, that energy is real. I actually finally, you know, from going to games for so long, I had never met him. So I finally met him about like a month ago. And you know, that's not a shtick. Like that's how he is. And he's not obviously like that, like all, you know, he's not just like the most energetic person, but he's just super passionate. And I think the thing with him that, you know, it's starting to show itself now, like he wants to, you know, be innovative. He doesn't want to do things necessarily the traditional way. I think, you know, you kind of, even now, like going to, you know, just going to 4 different arenas for road games, like you kind of see how the in-game operations are very similar team to team, kind of the way they structure things, you know, just the you know, the way things are set up in the arena, like everything's very similar across the NBA. And I think what Steve is trying to figure out is how to make the Clippers different. You know, I know he's they're trying to build that arena in Inglewood by 2024, which, you know, he wants to make that, like, you know, kind of design it almost for it to be super loud and kind of just, you know, put stuff in the concourse that would make it different than other arenas. And I think they're still kind of finalizing those details. So that's kind of all we know right now. But like, he wants to make that the ultimate fan experience. Something that the Clippers debuted this season that hasn't really been talked, you know, I've kind of been surprised because it's pretty cool. It's called Court Vision, where basically you can watch games. I don't think it's available for TV yet. I think it's only, you know, digital streaming. So like your laptop or your phone, but it's called Court Vision, and you can watch games in multiple modes. So you can watch it like a coach's mode where, it's showing you plays, as the action's happening, it's showing you like, this is the play that's happening. You could see guys shooting like live shooting percentages in game. So it's like, this guy's 2 for 5, this guy's 3 for 8, this guy's 7 for 10, whatever. And you can watch it from like, fan mode, like in the arena, and like there's a mascot mode and stuff. So like, it's this really cool new, kind of platform to watch games and consume games. And I think that's kind of like the future of where this is all going. I think at some point in the future, you're going to be able to put on a VR headset and watch it, almost be like you're watching a basketball game in the arena, like courtside or something. So I think with Steve, look, he's the richest owner in the NBA. Not only that, he's the richest owner in the four main, American professional, male sports. So he has an advantage financially that no other owner has. And I think he's shown a willingness to spend money. I think he's kind of revamped the business side of the team, the basketball side of the team. And I think he's been good so far. He's not been perfect. It seems like there's still been some turnover, internally with the team, that I think he's been figuring things out, and that kind of just is growing pains of being a new owner. But overall, I think Steve, really cares. He's been at, I believe, every game this season, traveling basically with the team. And I think I think that's the one thing that where like, I don't think the Clippers will ever surpass the Lakers or ever even make a serious dent in the Laker fan base. But if they do make any type of dent in the future, I think it will be because of Steve Ballmer and his willingness to be open to ideas and willingness to spend. Because I think, ownership is so important in the NBA. I think you've seen it work the opposite way with teams like the Knicks and the Kings. But then you've seen it work in great ways with teams like the Spurs and the Celtics and now the Warriors. And so I think the Clippers can kind of get into that. If Steve Ballmer could be a top 10 owner, top 5 owner, like, I think that's a huge advantage for the Clippers. Also living, kind of being in LA is another advantage. So that kind of combination, like, I think already you're starting to see, like, Jimmy Butler didn't put the Lakers on his list of teams he wanted to play for. Kawhi Leonard reportedly prefers the Clippers over the Lakers, and you're starting to see that change happen a little bit. The Lakers still have LeBron, and they're still the Lakers, but right. I do think for the Clippers' sake, like, Steve Ballmer might be that ultimate change if you're looking like 10, 20 years down the road.
Yeah, one player you just mentioned, Kawhi Leonard, he'll be a free agent next year, or this upcoming summer. He'd be a good acquisition for the Clippers. I mean, a two-way player. He came back, averaging 26, like, he hasn't missed a beat. Right now, they have him playing back-to-backs, the second of back-to-backs, which is trying to keep him healthy for the rest of the season. But he played 70 games. He missed 70 games last season, I'm sorry, because of that injury, which he basically set out for this moment. So he's trying to set up for his bigger contract. But if the Clippers can get him, I think it'll be a good pickup. Definitely him and Lou Williams together, that'd be a good pick and roll right there. And Gallo, maybe.
Yeah.
I think that'd definitely be a good pick.
Yeah, no. I think Kawhi, I mean, look, I know they're trying to go for two guys. So I think their ideal scenario would be Jimmy and Kawhi. I have my own reservations with signing Jimmy, just because I think you've seen now the way this Minnesota situation has played out has been ugly.
Yeah,
I think the way the Chicago situation played out was ugly. Like, I think at some point, and Jimmy's been in the, Jimmy's been at the center of both of them, and now you, I think you can make a reasonable case that he's probably been in the right in both situations.
But at the same time, the fact that it, you know, both situations involved the locker room being split and, you know, just being so much drama and turmoil, and potentially leading, you know, the Fred Hoiberg didn't end up getting fired, and Thibodeau hasn't been fired yet, but, you know, it kind of started those rumors of, you know, is this coach going to be fired, and, you know, so on and so forth. Like, I think for me, bringing in a guy like Jimmy Butler, that would be a concern for me. I'm a little bit skeptical of how he's going to age, and then, you know, adding in this kind of locker room dynamic that he seems to create, like, that to me would potentially scare me off of signing Jimmy Butler to like a 5-year, $190 million deal. Or even, I think if it's just in free agency, it might be like 4 years, 150 or something. But Kawhi, I think, you know, he had his own thing, obviously, with the Spurs and kind of how that played out. But like you said, you know, he looks, you know, pretty much back to normal, which, you know, was like a top four player in the NBA, guy that, and before he got injured in that series, he looked like the best player on the floor against the Warriors. Like, he was playing better than Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant. And it was only one game, but, you know, he has that type of potential. So I think if you're the Clippers, bringing in Kawhi Leonard is a no-brainer. You know, you sign him to whatever he wants. And I think you do that 10 out of 10 times. Jimmy, I would be a little bit concerned with, but I think if Kawhi really wants Jimmy and that's your second guy, yeah, I think it makes sense. If you miss out on Kawhi and you're looking at just bringing in Jimmy to be your guy, I think that might not make as much sense. The other name that's out there that I think, you know, I don't know how much interest he'd have in coming to the Clippers, but I think Kevin Durant would make a lot of sense to the Clippers. Like, if he's interested in the Warriors, which to me doesn't make sense, but, you know, look, it didn't really make sense for him to go to the Warriors leaving OKC. So, you know, he does his own thing. Respect. I think the Clippers, like, if he's going to consider the Knicks, I think the Clippers kind of fall into that big market team that hasn't had a lot of success lately. You know, besides the Lob City era, like, I think the Clippers had made the playoffs like 3 times in, you know, almost 30 years. So I think if, you know, winning a championship for New York would definitely be different than winning a championship with the Clippers. But I think going to the Clippers, you know, would make a lot of sense. They have a much better infrastructure. They have better ownership. They're closer to contending than the Knicks are.
True.
And look, you know, this is a guy that's always measured himself against LeBron. He said that multiple times. He was tired of finishing second to LeBron. Now he's you know, surpassed him in terms of, you know, the past couple of years winning championships and winning finals MVP and beating LeBron in the finals. But hey, LeBron took that plunge to take on that challenge of coming to the Lakers and trying to win a championship with them.
Right.
What if you come to the Clippers and you know, now you're going at LeBron in LA and trying to win a championship with the Clippers before he wins one with the Lakers? Like, that to me would be, you know, super fascinating if KD did that. I don't know if he, you know, I doubt he does that. You know, to me, I think he should stay in Golden State and continue winning championships. And the Knicks, I guess, makes some sense just because someone needs to make the Knicks good. you know, they've been bad for 20 years besides that one, you know, mellow year. So I'm not saying it's going to happen or I think it's going to happen, but I do think at some point KD to the Clippers will be in the mix.
If KD goes to the Clippers, I might be surprised. I mean, we all know he went to the Warriors because it was an easier road. He wanted to win. It made his game easier. You're talking about the second best player arguably on the planet behind LeBron James. He went to a 73-9 team that basically didn't need him. I mean, he's surrounded by arguably the best shooting backcourt in NBA history with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. With Klay Thompson just went off again, ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous. But if he went to the war, if he stays in the West, I think he stays with the Warriors. Because if he goes to the Clippers, he's like he'd be in the mix. He had to be the best player on the team, which he would be. But him, he had to fight. He had to go through the Warriors, the Trailblazers, the Jazz, the Thunder. It's like a stiffer competition. It's stiffer competition in the West. If he goes to the Knicks, I mean, he have an easier path to the finals besides going through arguably the Raptors and the Celtics. The Celtics are set up for the future right now with Tatum and Brown over there and Kyrie coming back and with Hayward, that team is going to be the team to beat in the East. But he have easier road, I say, in the East. But if anybody can do it, I believe he can do it. But he hasn't been known to be that leader. Like, he's arguably the best player on the Warriors right now because of what he brings. Like, Steph is the heart of the team. When Steph is playing and shooting threes, they can't be beat. But also, this team is taking turns. They're taking turns. Who's the leading scorer? Talking about the Warriors. Like, one night is Klay. Klay just broke the three-point record from Steph Curry, who had 13. Steph had 14. I mean, Kevin Durant just had 33 points last night. Steph had 23, I believe. Like, this Warriors team is ridiculous. I don't know. I think it's best decision be to stay home there. But we'll see. We've seen crazier things happen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and that's why I think to me that the smartest option for him is to stay in Golden State, because I think, like, look, I think they're going to win the title this season. I'd be surprised if they didn't. I think there's no reason not to favor them for the title next season as long as they bring everybody back. At that point, you have four rings. You've established yourself as, you know, one of the best scorers of all time, probably one of the best, I don't know, 15, 20 players of all time. Like, you're on that short list, and, you know, you've kind of done it all. So to me, you know, if he's even considering leaving Golden State, then I don't know what he's looking for. Like, maybe it's just like this journey kind of said he's been on, you know, finding himself and all this stuff. I don't know, but I'm like, if you're even considering leaving Golden State, where you have one of the best teams of all time, you guys, I mean, what people, you know, I think don't really talk, like, Golden, you know, for you know, I think they won 58 games last year, so that was like seven less than the Rockets, and it was kind of like a down regular season for them. Like, this team has coasted through the postseason with KD. Besides the Rockets series, they have never, you know, lost more than one game in a playoff series, in the eight playoff series they played. So it's like, this team, you know, we can worry about, you know, what seed they're going to be, how many games they're going to play, who's going to lead them in scoring, whatever. When it gets to the playoffs, like, this team has been crushing people the past two postseasons. You know, they've been destroying everybody.
Right.
You know, losing maybe one game. So to me, I'm like, if he is considering leaving that, he might not care that as much about winning as we think he should, or we think he should. Like, he might just want to have fun in New York. He might just want to have fun in L.A. Like, the Lakers are the other option. People have said maybe he goes to the Lakers, joins LeBron. Like, you know, I don't know. But with KD, you never know. Like, he's always doing his own thing, you know, the past 2-3 years. And I think if he leaves Golden State, like, that to me kind of just says he has other priorities, and that's fine. Like, I, you know, to each their own. I don't care either way. But I think if he does leave Golden State, to me, winning might not be the priority. And at that point, I think maybe more teams are in the mix.
Yeah, if the Warriors win, which we all think they will three-peat, and they have three rings, which is crazy. And he said this free agency for him is going to be about getting his money. So that could open the door for the Clippers. He says Steve Ballmer loves to spend money. 1 and 1 plus 2. So anything is possible. That could happen. And he goes there. Another free agent would definitely want to go there with him. Definitely.
I think so. And I think that's like, because the thing, I mean, you saw it with, you know, with the Warriors, you know, before they got Kevin Durant, like, they almost lost to the Thunder. They really should have lost that series, you know, if not for
Klay Thompson
outburst in game six, you know, that 39-point game, where he just went unconscious. And then they ended up losing the next series to the Cavs. And I think to me, like, even if you take Kevin Durant off the Warriors, they're still probably the slight favorite.
Right.
But I don't think that team is unbeatable without Kevin Durant. Like, I think then you focus a lot, like, because looking at that team before Kevin Durant, like, people forget, like, they had Harrison Barnes. Who Harrison Barnes, you know, he's not the first option. Like, he's been in Dallas the past couple of years, and that's gone terribly. But, you know, Harrison Barnes as your third or fourth option is pretty solid. Andre Iguodala, you know, 3 years ago was a better player. Sean Livingston, too. The team had more depth 3 years ago.
Right.
So I think if you're looking at, you know, this team kind of is currently constructed, if they lose Kevin Durant, like, you still have Steph Curry, who just having him, you're going to have a really, really good offense. Adding Klay Thompson, obviously. And you know, you can kind of live with those guys as your two best players, but or offensive players. But, you know, Draymond's been declining a little bit. I just have some worries. Like, so I could see, like, you know, if Kevin Durant leaves, like, I think that team is beatable. And if you're Kevin Durant, you know, you join LeBron with the Lakers, or maybe you go to the Clippers and you know, bring in Kawhi or Jimmy.
Right.
Or maybe you go to the Knicks with Kyrie or something. Like, I think all of a sudden you might be able to beat the Warriors. Like, it will still be tough. There's, you know, as long as you have Steph and Klay together, like, that just is, you know, so difficult to guard. But I don't think the Warriors are beatable if they lose KD or Steph. Like, you lose one of those guys, now all of a sudden they're just like a normal, really, really, really good team. So KD leaves, like, I think wherever he goes, he's going to have a chance to probably beat the Warriors, as long as he doesn't go to, like, the Kings, or I think the Kings are playing well, maybe the Bulls or something. Like, you know, there's few teams that you could go to that maybe won't have a chance, I think.
I think the Warriors, losing Steph will be bigger than them losing him, because, like I said, he came over, Durant came over in free agency, and Steph is like the heart of that team. We all know when Steph is hitting threes, it's crazy. This team is unbeatable, man.
Yeah.
They just take turns, and defense is like, you got to pick your poison. Like, you really can't double team anybody. Like, teams trying to pick on Steph on offense, put him in the pick and roll, which we saw when in 2016 when they lost to the Cavs. Kyrie Irving's eyes lit up when he saw Steph Curry in front of him, and he hit that dagger three set up by LeBron's block and gave him that title. So I think Steph is more important than Steph's more important. definitely.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with everything you just said.
So what do you think the Cavs letting go of Tyronn Lue after 0-6 start?
To me, what that says, and well, look, so let's not overcomplicate this. The Cavs have been a dysfunctional franchise. I think Dan Gilbert has proven over the years to be a dysfunctional owner. They lucked into getting back-to-back, you know, 2 out of 3 years, but the number one pick got them Kyrie and Anthony Bennett, who they're able to flip for Kevin Love, along with, well, actually, I'm sorry, they got 3 number one picks in 4 years, because they also got Wiggins. So
yeah, traded him.
They got really lucky in the draft. They're lucky that LeBron James was born there. You know, got drafted there. So I think that, you know, lost in the success they've had the last 4 years with LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love, like, this team has been poorly run. They've had a bunch of coaching turnover. They've had a bunch of front office turnover. Like, they've had contract holdouts that have gone into training camp. Like, this is... The organization has been a mess. If you're ranking the organizations from best to worst, like, the Cavs are probably in the bottom 5 somewhere. So I think that them firing Tyronn Lue, it didn't surprise me. I was like, all right, that's just another Cavs move. Like, it just kind of makes sense. Now, I also, what I was going to say initially was that I think that this speaks to, they wanted to fire him. They've just been waiting on kind of the thing that they can point to. You can't fire a guy that just went to 3 straight finals and won a championship. You know,
right after
LeBron leaves, you can't fire that guy, right? That wouldn't make sense. That would look terrible. That, you know, just like, what are you guys doing firing a guy who just took you to the finals? That's really kind of unprecedented, like never happened before. So I think for them, they were just waiting for the right opportunity to, you know, the second this team started struggling and looking like they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league, they were going to be ready to fire him. That's exactly what they did. You know, it seems like him and Kobe Altman, you know, from the reporting that's come out, did not have a good relationship toward the end, and kind of disagreed on, you know, who to play and how many minutes and how good the team should be and all this stuff. So I think that, you know, that's always the thing with these types of firings and stuff is, you know, it's often more than, you know, it's not only what people think of the coach or how, you know, how good he is as a coach. There's always politics involved. There's always, you know, relationships involved. And, you know, depending on the relationship with the owner, like, you know, seems like Dan Gilbert favored Kobe Altman's opinion in the situation over Ty Lue's. I think Ty Lue will get another coaching job. I still don't know how that's always the problem with LeBron led teams is like, it's kind of hard to separate the coach from LeBron and how good the team is. How much of that has to do because of the coach and how much of that has to do because of LeBron. So I still think like we don't really know how good of a coach Ty Lue is. I think there's been some good things with him. I think there's been some bad things with him. So I don't know. I can't sit here and say like he is one of the best coaches in the league because I don't know that. But I do think that what he showed in the 3 years that he coached the Cavs, like he probably deserves another job. You know, I'm sure there's going to be multiple coaches fired either during this season or next off season. I think he probably gets one of those jobs
right, if
he wants to return to coaching. So, I think it was an unfortunate situation. I think the Cavs, you know, the Cavs handled it, you know, poorly and not in the manner they should have, but that's how the Cavs operate. And that's just like not really surprising to me anymore.
Yeah, because we all know, well, LeBron spoke out on Tyronn Lue getting fired. He said, thanks for the partnership and bringing Cleveland the title, which was good words. I think he picked the right words because we all know LeBron basically carried that team. Tyronn Lue, he might have been a good coach behind the scenes, but we all know LeBron on the floor, he led that team to all those wins. The games he played, he was the reason they won. And he's the reason that they won that championship there. Like LeBron is so special, but Ty Lue didn't have a bad coaching job there. I mean, he had the best player, he had arguably a good roster, but like you said, it's a business sometimes, so it happens.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate side of it. And I mean, I also look at it like, Well, what were the Cavs' expectations of their season? Like, you know, this is not, I mean, and that speaks to LeBron even more. Like, you know, it's basically the same team from last season.
Exactly.
They added Colin Sexton and, you know, maybe they lost. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I can't think of who they lost, but, you know, obviously LeBron, but like, but besides him, like this is almost the exact same roster that won 50 games and made the finals last year, beat the Raptors in the playoffs,
right?
The Celtics in the playoffs,
took them to seven games.
Like 1-7 or something now.
They're 1-7. You know, that's crazy.
7. So they're one of the three, you know, bottom four team in the league, and you know, you can't put that on Ty Lue. And then what's funny is after all this, which we didn't even talk about, like. They tried getting Larry Drew to commit to being the interim, you know, to the interim coach for the rest of the season, but they would not guarantee his contract past.
Yeah, after the season.
And it's just like that's just the Cavs being the Cavs. Like they're a mess. And as long as Dan Gilbert's owning that team, they're going to continue to be a mess. They're going to continue to be dysfunctional. And I expect nothing less of them. I expect them to be bad for the next decade.
Yeah, and
just how they're going to be.
And Kevin Love is out for a month plus. He'll be evaluated in, I believe, 6 weeks. So they're going to go for a couple more draft picks, I believe. It's crazy.
I think so.
Jovan, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a great interview. Thank you so much. Thanks for your time, man.
I appreciate that, man. Long overdue. Glad we finally got to do it. Hopefully we can do it in the future.
Definitely. Definitely respect out. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, man.
Uh-huh. Yes, that was Lakers Clippers, Jovan Buha, joining us from L.A. I want to thank him for taking time out of his early day to join the NBA panel. And over the week, like I said, Klay Thompson once again had another eruption. Finished with 52 points in 27 minutes. Broke the NBA record for 14. Hit 14 threes in a game. Took the record from his teammate, Steph Curry. Arguably the best backcourt in NBA history. Just had the 3-point record on the same team, which is crazy. We all remember his 2016 outburst against the OKC Thunder in Game 6. He split up 41 points to save the Warriors' season, where they came back from 3-1 to beat Golden State. To beat OKC, and then Durant walked over to them. It was crazy, crazy. That's episode 107 of the NBA panel. We'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to the NBA panel with John Weatherspoon and co-host Brian Isley. Follow the NBA panel on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher for Android.